The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening and welcome to the National Intel Report. I am your host, Steve Elkins. Today's date is November 8th, 2021. You know, it still feels rather strange, very odd to hear that opening theme music open up the show, and then my co-host, or my actually the host of the show, because I'm the co-host, I ride shotgun, not welcoming me to the mic and picking at me for living down here in the swamp. I'm going to miss that. Over the weekend, we had a meeting on Saturday talking about which direction we're going to be going in, and we're going forward. We are going to go forward. We are going to survive this crisis. We're going to move on, and we're going to make it better. We're going to work on getting some advertising dollars. Doesn't mean we don't still appreciate your donations, but we are going to work hard at this, and we're going to keep the memory alive. Over the weekend, I talked to John's sister, Jessie. There's a little phrase that was told to me a while back, and I think it's what it's helped me get through the passing of my father. And the saying goes, you're never really gone when you leave a smile and a memory behind. I've got some great memories, some great things I want to share with you tonight. We had a lot more calls on Friday night for the tribute show that we did not get to. I seriously thought about having Michael contact Jeff Bennett and say, hey, can we take a half an hour? Can we take the full hour? But he's only an hour anyway. But I didn't do that. So what I want to do today, at least for the first hour, we got some news we can talk about, or we can make this just an extension of Friday night's show, a tribute to John Stadmiller. I'm getting tons of emails, still getting a lot of emails about John. People are shocked he's passed on. And I understand that very much. How much John meant to many people that they may have not called into the network, but they listened to the shows, and he had a direct impact in their lives. He opened their minds. He brought them to thinking about the big picture here. And that's actually been his goal, 33 years? He's told us many times, 33 years I've been doing this. And there's a term I had to think about some things that John likes to say. It's his typical language, his own rhetoric. And one of them was calling politicians an asshat. And I like that. I can't steal it. It's his. It's always going to be his, the asshat. And if I ever use it, of course, I'm going to say, look up at the skies and say, thank you, John Stadmiller, for that wonderful term that just fits so well with the politicians. I'd like to use slubber to gullion, and Mike Rivero uses, what does he use? Prostitutes, a couple others. They're all very good words, all very appropriate for the Congress. Another term he used to, or another phrase he used to say all the time, was to shuffle off this mortal coil. I will forever remember that phrase. And going along with that, because we've had that talk before this tragedy happening, John passing. John and I have talked about life and death. I think he's even talked about it on air a couple of times. That's why the phrase has come up, to shuffle off this mortal coil. In reference to leaving the earth, leaving this place a little bit better than when you first came. I've always liked that idea. also reminding me of a good discussion I had with a good neighbor of mine back in Indiana. I was really young at the time. I was 18 years old. And I, you know, you think you know a lot at 18, but you really don't know anything. You really don't. Until you leave the house and you live on your own for a couple years, you start to figure things out, the big picture. You start to say, wait a minute here. Boy, I'm thinking different. Actually, I believe you think differently. Approximately every 10 years, you change a lot in your viewpoints. But at 18 years old, I had a good friend who I thank very much from the bottom of my heart, who's no longer with us also, for helping me in calculus and a couple other classes I had. He was a mathematical genius, this guy. If I ever had any kind of problems, I just simply go to him. I'm saying, I can't quite figure this out. How do I do this? Now, if I had the internet back then, it would have been simple. You simply put it in Google search. You said how to figure out this, and it shows you step by step how to do it. But I didn't have that. We didn't have the internet back then. So I relied on my good friend who was an engineer to help me through this stuff. And he loved it. It refreshed his memory, made him feel young again. And I was a worthy cause. So he helped me, and then I sailed. In the other classes, I sailed. The pathophysiology, micro, loved those classes. But we were talking about death and dying at that time. I was only 18 years old. And I mentioned about, we were talking about passing on and cremation versus an actual burial and viewing. And he decided he was going to be cremated. And at that time, that kind of creeped me out. I was 18 and cremated. Oh my God, they put you in an oven and, you know, it burn you up, your ashes. But then it started to make sense to me that, you know, your body is just a shell. Your spirit leaves and you're just a shell. That's it. It's nothing. It's like a shell on the beach. The muscle is gone. It's just an empty shell. Your spirit has moved on to a higher place. So I talked to him about, we were talking about death and dying and about the funeral. And he said, well, there's no sense of really having a headstone. I don't want people to remember me, to actually come to a cemetery, just sit down and put flowers down on my grave to remember me. He said, if people can't remember the good I've done in my life while I was alive, then I really didn't accomplish much, did I? So with this whole saying here, you're never gone when you leave a smile and memory behind, that's exactly what keeps the memory alive of those who have passed on. That's helped me get through my father's death, and that's what will help me get through the passing of John Stadtmiller. I do want to play something for you early on. I'm going to pull it off my voicemail. I think you guys can hear it. I'm going to hope you can. And I just want to share this with you because it's important to me, because John didn't really know me that well yet, but evidently he did. He told me later on, I believe in you. I've looked you straight in the eyes. I've shook your hand. You got a firm shake. I believe in what you're saying. I believe you to be true. Your character is strong. I want you part of the network. I was happy to join the network and start my own show. But there was a time when I first started, within the first couple of weeks, I had a little interference. A host on this network who is no longer on this network, who is in heaven, I guess you can say. Yeah, she's gone. It would have been Al Whitney. Al Whitney did not like the idea of a nurse coming on the network and having a show, which is kind of ironic if you think about it, because Al Whitney, her real name was Anita, was a respiratory therapist for 30 years, her husband a physician. Now, she claimed that I was indoctrinated, I was part of the business, the industry of medicine. Well, I didn't have 30-something years in. I had a total of, what have I got in now, 22, 23 years. She had 30-something years. Her husband, a physician, as far as I know, still a physician. And I was kind of put back to say, wait a minute, you're questioning me, you're challenging me, you think I'm part of the medical industrial complex. And so I was kind of peeved about it. I called John on it. People were writing me emails, this woman is kind of coming after you, man. I tell John about it, and what does John do? John gets on the phone. I didn't tell him to do this. He got on the phone, And he gave Al Whitney a little call. And let's see if I can play this over my microphone, because I was just impressed with it, that I saved it all these years. And it just meant the world to me, because he just got to know me, but he believed in me that much to bat for me right off the bat. So here it is.
Hey, Steve, it's John over at the network. Hey, I read your email, and I called Al Whitney, and I went toe-to-toe with her for more than an hour on the phone. Her concerns is that you're brainwashed by the system that you're in, that you're going to diagnose or put medical stuff out, and I told her, I said, look, I said, I know the man. I said, I think I know what he's capable of doing. I know what he wants to do. So why don't we give him some time to develop it? She was very personally attached because her husband is a medical doctor that was in that field for many, many years, and he prescribed drugs to people that literally would kill elephants. At any rate, I told her to do an emotional detachment on this deal and to free up some space, free of criticisms, to allow other people to do their jobs, because, Al, I don't call you up. That's what she likes to be called. Her real name's Anita. Anita, I don't call you up to tell you how to structure your show, what to say and what not to say. I said, that goes for every host on this network. And she says, well, that's a good attitude to take. I said, it's the only attitude that I know how to take, because I run a network. You have to let people develop and do their thing. So no big shakes here. I appreciate the time that you spent in the thought on that email. And everything is okay. Except one thing, we didn't have you posted in the archives, and Mike is taking care of that today. I wasn't able to hear your show. But I understand you had Ronald McDonald on, so I understand Ronald. At any rate, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate you CCing that email over to me. Everything is, how did the Jews say it? Copacetic. There we go. Everything is copacetic. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Everything is copacetic. I will forever be thankful for that that phone call to Anita Al Whitney that John batted for me. That meant a lot to me. And I hope I didn't let him down. I know sometimes we went back and forth. We locked horns. And it was it made some interesting radio. But we always came back and said, you know, it's cool. It's cool. We're brothers. You know, it's cool. And so let's leave it at that. Like I said, I've kept that since 2017. I've had that on my phone saved since 2017. Before we bring on my co-pilot tonight, I actually have a co-pilot, our tech guru in Round Rock. Mr. Tom D is going to be with us here. He's going to ride shotgun. We're going to share some moments. We're going to share some great stories. I did not do a show last night. To be honest with you, I didn't have the energy. Emotional, I was just, it was just so much this week since Friday, and I had no gas left. I was totally winded. I had nothing left. I need some good sleep. I hope to get that tonight and kind of be back tomorrow, getting some things done here. Sunday, I'm working on another show in the future here. Sunday, I went out to, you're going to laugh at this, I went to a Florida cannabis festival. Well, why would you do that, Steve? Why would you go to a cannabis festival? Well, I'm looking at the alternative here to the opioid crisis here for pain management. But when I got there, I got to admit, I felt like I was at a Cheech and Chong festival. And it was rather funny. I may have looked at a place. There were some decent, normal people, but I do feel like I was part of a Cheech and Chong festival, tie-dye, hippies, headbands. And many of these people were there for the recreation portion of the cannabis movement. I did finally find a speaker this year. Last year, I thought I had a speaker who let me down, didn't show. But I got somebody reliable. We've talked again. She got back to her station, and we've talked this morning, and she's lining me up with some scientific people here to talk about the wellness side of cannabis here, CBD oil, hemp. of which I'm pretty convinced on it. Not personally speaking, I do know people who take it for pain management, but I use it on my dogs, which is great because it doesn't cost me quite as much as going to a vet and getting the pharmaceutical side here. So I'm going to be working on the next couple of weeks, have a couple of professionals on here. We're going to talk about the wellness side, trying to leave the opioids behind and move on to something else, not addictive, but also helpful in pain management. So I'm looking forward to that. All right. Well, like I said, let's talk about the phone lines are going to be open here. 512-248-8252. And it looks like we already got our first call, Tom. Let's take this call. Then I want to share some good stories, some great stories to give you a smile. Let's go to Philadelphia and talk to Glenn. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Hello, Steve. Hi. This is Glenn from Philadelphia. You may know, I'm a nurse, an RN. And to hear this story about Al Whitney, you know, I just think back immediately to, you know, nursing education, preparation, and stuff like that. She and the idea of the nursing process, she clearly unfamiliar. I can't imagine somebody having those objections if they understood the underpinnings of nursing process, you know, head-to-toe assessment, care planning, inductive reasoning, inductive rather than deductive differential diagnosis. Nursing diagnosis is inductive. It reasons from specific to general, and it refers, you know, defers, you know, the questions and the diagnosis to the doctors, and it's a very holistic process. And nurses routinely, because of that way of thinking, preempt problems in patient care by calling things to the attention of the doctors, and this idea that somehow nurses are just pawns of big medicine or big pharma or something. She doesn't understand the process.
No, she doesn't. She certainly doesn't understand me, because John and I talked about how many times I've gone head to head with a physician saying, no, I will not carry that order out. I will not carry that order. And I did it in a tactful way, in a professional way. And then I was forced, basically saying, you will do it. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm a patient advocate. I have taken the Hippocratic Oath also. I will do no harm. So if you want to do it, you go ahead and do it. And I tell you what, I'm going to document this, and I will call risk management. And I will call my my nurse supervisor and the ICU manager. I will call the director of nursing of the hospital. And I've taken people head on. I've had physicians say, I want this guy fired. I want this guy fired. It never happened. I've always had a manager back me up and say he's following our protocol here, and he's on the side of caution. He's making good sense, and it's not an insubordination. It's simply saying it's dangerous. I think I know what I'm doing here. Somebody's blood pressure is borderline, and you want me to give a huge whopper dose of a beta blocker, an ACE inhibitor? No, we're not going to do that. Either going to cut the dosage down quite a bit, or we're going to find an alternative. So I wouldn't follow orders. I just would not follow orders that I knew would cause harm to my patient. So Al did not know that about me. Like I said, I've gone toe-to-toe many times, and I've won every one of my battles with a physician. Won every one of them. I've never lost a battle yet.
Well, the nice thing is it doesn't usually take a battle, because once you point out something that's discrepant or potentially problematic, usually the physicians are like, Dad, nice catch. Thanks, dude. Thanks for calling that to my attention.
Sometimes that happens. I find cardiologists have major attitudes. Surgeons, of course, you know, surgeons, sometimes they feel like they're God because of what they do. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just give you a little example here. I had a patient when I was living in Jacksonville. I was at St. Luke's Hospital, which is a Mayo Clinic hospital. I had a patient that had DVTs. Lower legs, confirmed by ultrasound. The physician ordered SCD, sequential compression devices, on the legs.
Oh, my God, for DVTs? And can you say pulmonary embolism?
I stopped him, and I said, no. He said, no, you're going to put them on. And I called him on the floor, said, no, I see your order here. We can't do that. It, you know, squeezing could release those clots, and you got a pulmonary embolism, you got a stroke. He said, no, you're going to put them on. I said, no, I'm not going to put them on. He came down. I called the nurse manager. Nurse manager said, Steve is right. We're not going to take this chance. He finally said, okay, DC the order. Don't put him on then.
Right, right. Hey, maybe how about some heparin instead, maybe, or something like
well,
that?
Well, he was on a heparin drip, but still, they didn't use any TPA. Nothing was used to dissolve the clot. The clots were still there. He was being anticoagulated, but I wasn't going to put sequential compression devices on and squeeze those legs, and watch that clot, pop loose. I wasn't going to chance that.
No. I mean, if once it's clear and the Doppler's good, maybe a few weeks down the pike, help with the edema or something later on, but not then.
No.
But yeah.
And that was a foreign doctor, too. You know, I had the biggest problem calling doctors, certain states. I down here had a problem calling doctors that were foreign, and their English was so poor. I used to take them off, and I wasn't being disrespectful, but I can't understand you. I can't understand what you've just ordered. At that time, we didn't have the system built in that they, from their homes, their own computer, could send me over their new physician's orders. They couldn't do that back then. But so he would tell me over the phone. I'd write as a nurse's order. I wrote these orders, but I couldn't understand this guy. I said, I'm sorry, but I can't understand what you're saying. You're going to have to come in and actually physically be here and write the orders. Well, you're talking about getting a guy hot. Why I can't understand him? English is terrible. Okay, it's that bad. Even if I hand it off to somebody else, see if you can make out what he's talking about, because I cannot understand what he's saying. Well, so just come in here, write the orders, we're squared. This is a problem. Right. This is a problem we have in the medical field. Communication is so important. And then we have foreign doctors who have very poor English. Well, mistakes are going to be made. If I try to figure out what you're saying and I write the wrong order, mistakes are made. Whose fault is it? Is it my fault? It's going to be my fault.
Right.
I'm not going down there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But the with people from India, that it's a very they're used to speaking very labially. The sounds are formed on the lips, and we Americans are used to more dentals and gutturals. And that's the big issue there. Right. You know who else? You talk about surgeons sometimes thinking they're bad. You know who's problematic for me sometimes? ICU nurses.
Some of us are. Some of us are. I admit, I've come into some major egos in ICU. I admit, I'm not one of them, but I have bumped heads with some of them before myself. So, yeah, I don't have that attitude. I work pretty well with most people, but I won't be bullied either. So,
a couple months back, I was in a local Magnet Hospital, Level 2 Trauma Center, ICU for a nosebleed of all things. They're like, what's he doing up here? I ended up locking horns with one or two nurses up there. It's like, oh, man. Yeah. But anyway, but they're very busy. And I can't imagine what it's like being yoked to the computers these days. That's got to be
brutal. It's terrible. It's the worst thing that's ever happened, the automated to the digital documentation. Actually, I theorized, and they called me a nut when I was in Santa Rosa. I told them, I said, there's an agenda behind this. This whole digital thing of putting all my notes now on the computer and to be on a hard drive, which the servers at the hospital were not protected well. I can guarantee you, easy to hack into. I knew there was something up, that this would be released. Insurance companies would probably get their hands on this. They'll jack your rates up. This was not going to be secure information on the net. It was going to be hacked. And I was right. I was 100%. They called me a kook. Oh, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. Now, look how much of our world already that's been digitalized has been stolen. Theft. This is amazing. Right. I wasn't crazy. I was right on it. But still, they're still doing it. They're still doing it. They're still putting all that information in there, and they think it's secure, and it's not secure at all.
Typically, if I had worked in a job where we interface with hospitals and stuff, they have big server farms miles from the hospital that are protected with hardware, firewalls, and stuff like that. But even if they've done due diligence, the real hackers say they just kind of walk through firewalls.
Yeah,
anyway,
they do. So. They do. They do. Yeah. They do. Hey, Glenn, I got to move on.
All right, take care. Thank you. Bye.
Appreciate it. We're going to go back to one more call here, and then we're going to start sharing some stories here, but we'll probably have a commercial break in between. Let's talk to Al in West Virginia. Welcome, Al.
Hey, how you doing? Hey.
Good.
Mm-hmm. On that CBD oil, you want to be careful. I heard a lady that came over from, I don't remember if it was Argentina or Spain or someplace there, where she was really interested in getting into that, and she done a lot of research here in the United States and took a lot of, had a lot of scientists and chemists do test runs on everyone that she could find in the United States, and every bit of it, none of it showed up with any CBD oil in it. It was all fake. And she finally got to meet somebody that knew how to make it the right way, mm-hmm. And then they turned her on to somebody else, yeah. And so anyhow, she wound up going back after years of this research that she done. She finally went back home and opened up her own as a secondary, thing. I think she was into like a restaurant business or something to start with. But anyhow, you just want to be careful that if you get into that, really have it checked out and see what the ingredients are.
Yeah, my experts are going to have the science. They're going to have all the information. And you're right. There's pure. There's better qualities. And we'll talk about all that. So I'm looking forward to this show in a couple of weeks. So you definitely want to check this one out. Hey, appreciate the call. I think we got a commercial break coming up right now. And we'll talk to, anybody else who wants to call. 512-248-8252. No break. Break. Break in 2 minutes. That's fine. Okay. All right. Let's talk some humorous moments here. Like I said, you're never gone when you have a memory and a smile behind. John came down to see me in 2018, May of 2018. I have no clue why he thought he would be okay coming down in probably the worst time of our heat. May in 2018. May is a terrible month to come down. Now, if you live on the beach, you get a nice breeze, but I don't live by the beach. There's really not a whole lot of wind. I'm kind of been stuck in the center here. And John comes down, and he just couldn't believe how hot it was. So, I said, well, you should have. I kind of told you to come in the fall when it's kind of cooler, nice, 60s and 70s is nice. But he wanted to get out of town, and I don't think he actually quite knew how hot Florida was in the middle of May. But I like to cook. This is a funny story I like to share. And this is the one that got me laughing yesterday when I was talking to I ended up texting and calling up John's sister, Jessie, that I like to cook. And that didn't happen by accident. I had a really bad tennis elbow many, many years ago, back in the 90s, trying to saw a good-sized tree trunk. Some good size ones. And my father was trying to do it himself. And we, for some reason, we don't have chainsaws and stuff like that in my dad's house. So I decided, I can probably do that with a handsaw. Here, let me take over here. I don't want you to have a heart attack on this. My dad was in his 80s at the time. So I'm just working really hard with the handsaw. And of course, you understand that seesaw motion of a saw is not good on the ligaments on the elbow. I ended up giving myself a really bad tennis elbow, and I didn't do anything right as far as immobilizing it, anti-inflammatories. I tried a little bit. I should have used more ice. I did everything wrong, and I thought it would just, at my age, I would heal fast, come back, no problems. I go back to Utah, start to work again. It starts to act up. So again, I go see an ortho specialist. He looks at it and says, yeah, you got a pretty bad tennis elbow here, tendonitis. Let's give you a little shot here to bring down that inflammation, a little steroid shot here, cortisone. So I get a cortisone shot, and it does wonders. Oh, my God, it feels so good. You can move that arm again. Well, you're only supposed to take about 2, probably 3 maximum. I think I ended up over time getting 4. That's a bad thing. I did not do my homework. I trusted this doctor wholeheartedly. He screwed up my arm even worse. When I get back, I'll tell you more what happened here. There's a point to this story. Stay tuned. National NTR Report, Steve Elkins. My good friend, Tom D, is going to jump in here in a second. We're going to share some great stories of John Stadmiller. Stay tuned.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Deep in the heart of Texas, back in 1835, they drew a line in the sand. The folks at Gonzales had freedom on their minds. It was all because of a cannon that had kept their colony safe. But then General Santa Anna sent some Mexican troops to take the big gun away. You know what those colonists said?
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but we'll warn you. You'll have to pry from our cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us. So you best not cross.
And we are
line.
Back. Another phrase that just came to mind, that John said ass hats, and he had his own little do it before I shove off this mortal coil. But another one just came to mind was, he always said, I love my country. It's the government I don't trust. I happen to agree with that wholeheartedly. Same feeling. I love my country. It's the government I don't trust. All right, get back with my story here. So I hurt my arm pretty bad. I had to go for surgery. And he got in there. He said, after I woke up out of in the anesthesia, he said, I said, how was it? He goes, well, it looked like hamburger in there. I wonder why it looked like hamburger. Maybe because I had too many cortisone shots. He didn't say much. Yeah, that's exactly why. Well, about a week later, something else happened to my arm. I actually had a divot. It just started to sink in my elbow like a crater, and I think, what the hell happened now? What's wrong with my arm now? So I go back to the doctor, and it's funny. He goes, What happened there? You tell me. It's got a big divot there. Like I put a golf ball in there. Maybe that's what it's for. Put your elbow up high. Put your golf ball in there. You can put your bubble gum saver. I don't know. What the hell is this? Well, we're going to have to go back in there and figure out what's going on. Let's set you up for surgery again. Surgery number two. I go in there and he has a surgery and I come out of surgery and I said, well, how'd it go this time? He said, I wired you good. I wired you so dang tight. There ain't no way that thing's going to come apart now. Except they forgot to do a block and I had so much pain afterwards. I'm lying on the couch suffering in so much pain because the anesthesiologist kind of forgot to do his job. So the bottom line is I had to take off some time from work. I think it was 2 months to allow my elbow to heal before because I do a lot of lifting, a lot of big people, a lot of big patients. So it took me about 2 months. So what do you do at home for 2 months? What do you do? I ended up watching reruns of NYPD Blue and Food Network, the cooking channel. That's where I decided, this is pretty cool stuff. I like to cook. I think I do. And I'm learning. So when the wife gets home, I'll make a nice meal and I'll, show her what I've learned today, being productive on my day. And so I got into cooking. I enjoy cooking and then I learned about spices. And so I have now a passion for certain things. I love to cook. So John comes down. I don't know really what he likes to eat other than hamburgers and French fries. I know that's pretty much his base, his staple diet. But I'm going to do something different here. I decided to do a special Russian meal. It's called shashlik. A little bit of a German flair to it. My mother makes it all the time. It's made with chicken and curry and beef and liver. You can choose the meat you want. I made it with chicken. And it was pretty spicy, a lot of curry. And John sat down and started to eat it. And he looked pretty hungry. And I looked over and he started to have beads of sweat on his forehead. And I said, you all right? He goes, it's pretty hot. I said, not really, but okay. And so he finished the meal. The next day, the next morning, he was up getting up a little late. I said, how'd you sleep? Because I didn't. I was running to the bathroom all night. I felt like I had a colonoscopy. I've never had the runs so bad. You cook hot. And I said, I cook like this all the time. Even my wife will cook at this heat. No problem. So I ripped him a new one. And I just had to laugh because I was eating curry last night and it was nice, a little toasty, a little hot. And I said, wow, I really like this. It's got a nice flavor. But who doesn't like curry? John didn't like curry. So he was only with us about 4 or 5 days. And I think 3 of the 5 were trying to clean himself out with my hot curry. So it did make me laugh. I also got a kick out of it. He'd never seen a gator before. I took him on a long drive and around coastal areas and around these lakes. And by golly, we see the gators all the time out here. There's not a big deal, but my God, there's a huge gator over there. It's sitting on somebody's dock and pull over now. So I pull over and he grabs his cell phone and forgets that you can actually zoom in on your phone to take a picture of a gator. You don't want to get too close. But John runs up to the gator. He runs up with it about 20 feet of the gator. It's an 8-footer. It slides back in the water. And I said, you can pull that in and make it, bigger, closer on your phone. Oh, yeah, I guess I can. So we're lucky we didn't lose him that day just to the gator itself. He made a comment about me watching TV. And I watch tennis. I like tennis. I'm into tennis. I was a player. And men's tennis, he didn't care so much about. He goes, well, I don't know why you watch this. It's just hitting the ball back and forth. But then when the women's tennis came on, John changed his tune. He realized how beautiful the women in tennis are. And I kid you not, if you have an OVA at the back of your name, OVA, Russian, the Russian women are all beautiful in tennis. You got Sharapova. He was playing at tennis at that time. But you see OVA on the back of a name, keep it on. Watch. I guarantee you, you're going to love tennis. The girls are beautiful. Beautiful legs, beautiful bodies, and they play a damn good game of tennis. But John then says, I could see why you watch this. I'm kind of getting into this. So I turned him on to women's tennis. So when he ever called me up, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm watching women's tennis. He said, and the channel is what channel? So he would be turning on to women's tennis, and we'd watch together and talk about it. So that's a couple funny stories that make me laugh about John Stadmiller. Tom, you must have some good stories because you were right there with him all the time. Tell me, share a good story with us.
Okay, well, I've been sitting here. I'm still working on putting together that he's not here. I'm sitting at his studio, sitting in his chair. I feel kind of like a Lilliputian here in a huge, huge chair, and just still thinking about all the stuff we did. He would he would have problems. He was not a computer person.
No,
and he just had a lot of problems trying to navigate computers, and he used to ask me. He says, "Can you give me an XP computer?" And I said, "Well, I can give you anything you want, but it's not going to work." And he would just like, "Why won't it work? I don't understand this." And he just, said, "I can give you Windows 7 and make sure that it looks just like XP, which it sort of did. It was a couple little changes you had to make, but." Sure. Anything that I could do to make it easy for him to navigate the computers. Then we went to 10. He just kind of like, went into a, I was at his house when I went over to do it. And he got so mad, he picked up the screen of the computer, and he cracked the screen because he grabbed it so hard. And I thought he was going to chuck it into the fireplace. I don't know. Most of the stuff that him and I talked about was more on a serious line. I'm sure that, you know, things will come to my attention, but I remember the day that he called me that I had left a message for him because it must have been right in 2017, maybe August, September, when they were having all the network issues. And I called and left a message. He called me back and he says, "We're having really bad trouble down here." I said, "Well," I said, "I can, I might be able to come down there." And I said, "But you know, I don't have any, I don't have a place to stay or anything." He says, "I got a blow up mattress in the other spare bedroom." He says, "I'll get the pump on that thing. We'll have that thing rocking and rolling for you." He says, "If you can come down." And I said, "Okay." So I packed my little car and shoved everything in there that I could. I think if I had slammed the doors too hard with the windows closed, it would have popped the window. I had it so full.
Yeah.
And I spent, you know, I guess a week down here. He made me breakfast every morning. He was good. He wasn't too bad of a cook either. He'd make me breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a coffee person, but he had this black powder. Was it?
It's a black
rifle.
Rifle. I have some of that. Yeah.
And in fact, I saw that coffee company the other day when we were driving. You guys can hear me okay, right? I'm not too close to the microphone, not too far.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
A little closer? Okay. How's that? I have asthma, so John used to. When I'm on the other side of the. When I'm on the other side of the table, the few times I did the show with him, and he's looking at me, and he's trying to tell me something in like sign language, and I couldn't understand what the heck he was trying to tell me. Because with the asthma, I breathe really loud, and I finally got the point where I'm breathing into the microphone. I guess I must have been going like that, and he had this screwed up look on his face. He's like, "Don't you understand what I'm not saying?" that was cuckoo. So,
well, I kidded him. We have a treehouse in our backyard. The people lived here had a couple kids, and it's a kind of a cool treehouse. I threatened John. I said, "When you come down here next time, I'll just put you out there. Treehouse. We'll run a long extension cord, put a box fan up there. You can sleep outside with the animals." But it actually is a cool treehouse. This about a couple of days before his passing, he calls me up and we would just sit and chat. We would, you know, a lot of times we would talk. It turned out to be a show, and I said, "You know what? This was a show. You got to start when you call me." And we get into these discussions, you need to record it because we just had a show and we spent 45 minutes talking about this and that. You had a show. Can you remember what we talked about? I made little notes. So let's talk about when next time we go on air. But he would do that all the time. It wouldn't be just chit chat. He hated small talk. He would talk. "Did you hear about this? Did you hear about this?" But the last conversation I had with him was he called. He was just like he's watching a football game. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm in the kitchen. I'm cooking." I said, "You say, what are you cooking?" I said, get this, I'm making spinach balls and kale balls. He goes, why? I said, well, they're pretty good for you, you know, and they're tasty. And why would you want to eat spinach or kale? You know, Jesse said he doesn't like vegetables. And I said, well, this is a good way to get vegetables. It's got cheese in it. There's a lot of good stuff in here. And you might like it. He said, nah. He was never interested in the spinach balls or the kale balls. But he was a hamburger guy, you know. He was a Big Mac guy, quarter pounder guy, and fries. And when he came down here, I took him to a place that had the biggest monstrous burger I've ever seen. It's called the Big Boy Burger. And he used to say, ah, it can't be that big. And he looked down at it. He said, geez, this is the biggest burger I've ever seen in my life. I said, it's pretty nice. So I treated him to the best burger he had ever had, he said, at the time. But no, he probably should have eaten more vegetables, but he didn't. Not always the best eating habits there. I guess we can all be guilty of that time or two.
When I'd have lunch with him sometimes over at his house, and I'd say, John, I'm on my way over. You want something to eat? And he'd, yeah, give me a burger or something. I said, how about a salad? You want some? How about some salad?
He goes, yeah.
He says, what do I look like, a rabbit? Yeah. Yep. And yep. I said, well, I said, you know, I never wanted to get too deep under his skin sometimes to try to push him in the right direction, but
I tried several times to kind of push him in more of a healthy, but you know, it's John. It's
what's
John.
The old by the saying? Way, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him take a bath.
Yeah, that's it. 512-248-8252. We had a lot of callers that were waiting online on Friday. So if you want to come in, you want to chime in, you want to talk about John, a good memory, questions, or something happened. Maybe he hung up on you like he hung up on me. Maybe you'd like to talk about that. So phone lines are open, 512-248-8252. I don't know if I told you that, Tom. John had hung up on me back in 2015 or so. I called in. He didn't like what I had to say, and it annoyed him, I guess, and dropped the call. That was all right. It didn't bother me too much. I thought I made a pretty good point here, but just didn't like some of my terms, the terms I used. So I don't think we ever actually talked about that. And if actually Mike Rivera had hung up on me before too. So I have three hosts that have hung up on me. John Stadmiller, Mike Rivero, and James Kelso, and I locked horns, and he hung up on me also. So
that,
I've had three
hosts. Was that on the air, or was that over just on a phone
air.
Call?
No, okay. on air.
John hung up on me a few times. Let me tell everybody, I don't know if everybody knows who I am or how I got here. I have been involved in this quote-unquote patriot movement since 1980. I've personally met people like Ron Paul, Irwin Schiff, Red Beckman, George Gordon. I was member of probably every patriot organization out there in the 80s. And after a while, going around, and I worked at a nuclear plant in Pennsylvania, and every day at lunch I would go out. I was an inspector. I worked for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Don't hold that against me. And sometimes I do glow at night. I would go out every day at lunch, because back then there was no internet and there was no other way of communication. So I'd go every day to the mailbox. What's there today? Oh, I got a newspaper from the Spotlight. I got a newspaper from the Justice Times. I got a tape recording of this event that happened. And I was just starving for information. And I subscribed and bought every book and pamphlet, tape, video. I bought George. I don't know if anybody know who George Gordon was. The George Gordon School of Common Law. I have all his tapes. I still have them. I think the copies that I have are pretty degraded after I made extras for people. But I got tired of it. I was anybody out there in California, Southern Cal, should have remembered the Your Heritage Protection Association. Mm-hmm. That was probably one of the biggest patriot groups in the country. And they got shut down by the feds in, I guess, the late 80s. But the point was that I kept looking and going to all these, talking with people. You couldn't get two of these groups to cooperate with each other. Now, this is discussions that John and I had over and over, hours of discussions about why we're not getting gaining any ground on all this is going on. These guys, I have the right idea. The guy over there, yeah, he's okay, but you know what? He's off course. I had friends that I tried to help and get them on the right track. They ended up in jail from fighting the IRS. That's mainly where my footing into all this started. So then I just got to the point where I was so disgusted I couldn't do anything. Nobody wanted to cooperate with each other. And let's finish this after the break, I guess. We got
yeah,
music.
We're going to short commercial break here. We'll come right back.
I got to get this out. This is
all right. Okay. We'll let you get. All right. 512-248-8252. We got a few more calls on the line here. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Let you go, 'cause now you've got to fly.
Going back to my youth here in my metal days, the band's called Slaughter, Flight of the Angels. I was thinking about John, and I heard that song the other day, and I said, you know what, Flight of the Angels. That's where John is right now, flying to the angels. Tom D, tell us, go ahead and finish up your story.
Okay, well, anyway, it got into the point where I got so frustrated with so many of these groups that nobody wanted to play well with others that I just kind of like, you know, just turned my back on everything and just like, well, I don't, you know, not so much as to the reason we were doing things, but I just couldn't get anywhere with the, I was involved with the New Jersey Americans for Constitutional Taxes, the Delaware, the Free State Constitutionalists in Maryland, and probably every possible group you've ever heard of, I had my some kind of document or book or contact with them. And I just gave up. I just really just gave up and went about my life still with the mindset that you know, there's a big problem and we need to solve it, but I couldn't get anybody to help. Yeah. So around, I don't know, somewhere, I got laid off from my job in Pennsylvania, November 2010. And I said, I'm not doing this anymore. A friend of mine, who I wish I had known 20 years sooner, helped me put a business on my own business together. And that basically occupied me for several years. Till 2010, I'm running this. I'm working 18 hours a day, 8 days a week, trying to make good on my promise that I wouldn't let it fail and his help wouldn't have gone wasted. And then somewhere between 2012, 2015, I heard John. Mm-hmm. And I go, like, who is this guy? And I listened, and then I listened again, and then it got to be a daily ritual mm-hmm. that no matter what I was doing, I had to listen to him. And that was when his show was, I think it was later on, I think it was 6 to 8.
Actually an hour earlier.
Okay, yeah. One way or the other it was. And yeah. I finally, I don't know, I listened to it for a long, long time. I finally got up and called once, and mm-hmm. I was Tom from Philly. People may remember mm-hmm. that, Tom from mm-hmm. Philly calling. Mm-hmm. And then I called and left a message for him, and one day he called me back. He says, what can I do for you? Yeah. And that was the beginning of that. Mm-hmm. Then I started calling more and more. I talking to him on the phone at home, and then the problem came about where they were having the issues, came down here, and yep. the rest is history. So the
rest is history.
The problem that Great John stuff. And I discussed was that we gotta stick together, we just aggravated John to no end that we couldn't yeah. all come together and be one big group and fight together.
Yeah. Second hour coming up. Your calls, 512-248-8252. We got two in the loop. We'll be right back.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central, and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.